Happy Pride, everyone. I'm Greg Moralia, and welcome to Outbeat Now. Jeff Basham and I are still off celebrating Pride in San Francisco tonight, but of course we wouldn't leave you hanging without a great new show. And in keeping with the Pride theme, Jeff has put together a great historical perspective of gay Pride celebrations. And later on Outbeat Youth, I'll share interviews with Jason Galasadas and Nathan Mansky. But first, here's your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, June 26th, 2011. This week, The Advocate featured images from gay pride festivals in Eastern Europe that show a mix of rainbow flags and riot gear, offering a starkly visual reminder of the danger and courage needed to sometimes live openly in many places around the world. More than 1,000 people participated in a gay pride march in downtown Budapest. Police followed gay pride marchers through Budapest and other major Eastern European cities to protect them from attack. Extremist groups had called on followers to stop the parades and festivals. Pride celebrations in Moscow, Russia, were canceled again this year. City officials said such events would create civil unrest. Lieutenant Dan Choi, one of the American service members who fought against Don't Ask, Don't Tell, went to Moscow to join other activists in a protest. Choi was among those arrested by Russian police. You can find out more at advocate.com. And here in the United States, a new study confirms not only the personal benefits of being able to come out at work, but the economic benefits as well. According to the Center for Work-Life Policy, LGBT employees who are out flourish at work, while those who are in the closet languish or leave. According to the study, almost half of the college-educated gay Americans hide their sexual orientation at work, despite company policies that extend protection and benefits to gay employees. The study said that 48% of gay workers are closeted, and about a third of those closeted workers are nevertheless out in their personal lives, causing them to lead a double life. The result is that they are more likely to report job-related stress and isolation from their peers, and more likely to say that they want to leave their current job. This has huge implications for employers, because the study also found that LGBT employees are highly desirable workers, and are the kind of workers employers should want. In fact, the study showed 71% of those LGBT employees are described as ambitious, 88% are committed and willing to go the extra mile for employers, 48% have a graduate degree compared to 40% of their straight counterparts. The study showed that 52% feel stalled in their careers compared to only 36% to those who are out, and 73% are more likely to say that they will leave their companies within the next 3 years. The bottom line here, employers should consider how their commitment to an inclusive workplace influences the caliber of employee they're able to recruit and retain. Most Fortune 500 companies prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and extend benefits to workers' same-sex partners. Currently in the United States, only 21 states prohibit employers from discriminating against LGBT workers. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
long as he needs me. You don't have to say you love me, just be close at hand. You don't have to stay forever, I will understand. Believe me, I can't help but love you, but believe
Welcome back to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. I'm Jeff Basham. You were just listening to a montage of songs which have, starting in 1939, been called gay anthems. Songs which have gained a lot of popularity among the LGBT community. As we go to air, the San Francisco Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Pride Celebration 2011 is drawing to a close. Vendors are breaking down, hauling their wares away, and the street cleaners are in full force. The over 1 million people who attended today's festivities are on their way to evening events or back to where they traveled from. Today was the 41st anniversary of the first LGBT celebration in San Francisco. Tonight, in celebration of 41 years of the gay liberation movement, I'm going to talk about the history of gay pride celebrations, focusing mainly on San Francisco. But first, we head to New York City, 42 years ago.
Where were you in the June of 69? Sing a song of Suzanne, Sweet Caroline. Did you walk on the moon or both feet on the ground? Were you Woodstock bound? Those were the days when the bars became our homes, 'cause we had no church or state to call our own. And they raided the bars and the cars were on patrol, and they bugged our phones. But there came a time, a summer's night, everyone turned out to join the fight. Out of 20 million strong, not a queer soul was at home to hear it told. To hear it told, everyone was at Stonewall. It's widely known, not a soul was home. Every G&L has a New York tale to tell. Stonewall was everyone. Did you hear the coins go rolling round the square? Did you see the crowd with long, beautiful hair? Did you see them throw the building in the air? 'Cause you were there. And was it true? Did a cry go through from the village on up 2nd Avenue? Did they hear it in Uncle Charlie's and Aunt Julie that they were free? To hear it told, everyone was at Stonewall. It's widely known, not a soul was home. Every G&L has a New York tale to tell, 'cause Stonewall was everyone. Now the post office, which in those days screened our mail, with a mind putting some of us in jail, has cast a stamp in the image of us all for the old stone wall. Though the Congress continues to queer our goose, and the Pentagon is still out on the loose, Connecticut, Hawaii, Wisconsin, Vermont, California, New Jersey, Minnesota, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Nevada, and Rhode Island, Washington, New York, Maryland, Illinois, New Mexico, Iowa, and Maine, too, have come through. president will sing the Stonewall song. We'll be heading up the White House to Rome, where we belong. To hear it told, everyone was at Stonewall. It's widely known, and so was home. Every GNL has a New York tale to tell, 'cause Stonewall was everyone. To hear it told, everyone was at Stonewall.
That song was Everyone Was at Stonewall, written and performed by singer-songwriter Sandy Rapp. Her best-known songs are Remember Rose, A Song for Choice, and the one you just heard, Everyone Was at Stonewall, A Gay History, written for police sensitivity training, which won Stonewall Society's Pride Song of 2004. You can find Sandy on the web at www.sandyrapp.com.
Turn the beat around. Love to hear percussion. Turn it upside down. Love to hear percussion. Love to hear it blow.
Sandy's song reminded us of the June 27th, 1969 raid on the Stonewall Inn in New York City. That night was just like any other, until it wasn't. The police raided the Stonewall just like the many times before, but this time, instead of business as usual, they walked in on a united community filled with rage. Rage for the way they had been treated, persecuted, and disrespected. The people had had enough, and they were done. The cops were not prepared. We all know what happened that night and the days following as the so-called Stonewall Rebellion continued. It was certainly the start of something, but I don't think anyone would have predicted where we would be in 40 years if you had questioned them then.
We are family.
The next year, on June 28, 1970, just one short year after the historic raid in New York, the first celebration of LGBT rights was called a Gay-In, after a 30-person, mainly hair fairy, march. That's what transgender people were called back then, down the then gay ghetto, Pult Street in San Francisco. Several hundred people attended the Gay-In at Speedway Meadows in Golden Gate Park. The theme that year was Freedom Day Revolution. The same day, the first official Gay Pride Parade took place in New York City, where over 2,000 people marched. In 1971, there was no official Pride celebration in San Francisco, but the Age of Aquarius Parade on a Sunday in August marched down Folsom Street in what was called the Gay Pride Parade of that year. In 1972, the Christopher Street West Parade and Festival was the first year that the event started to resemble the San Francisco Pride celebration that we are all familiar with today, with a festival at Civic Center after the parade. The name was clearly a nod to New York City and the street that the Stonewall Inn is located on. That year, the attendance soared to approximately 54,000. 1973 started a new name for the LGBT event, which would stay for the next 8 years, Gay Freedom Day. The attendance dropped by about 20% as the festival moved back to Golden Gate Park. A celebration of the gay experience was the theme. 1973 was also the year that the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its manual of mental disorders. The next 2 years, the Gay Freedom by 1976 and the Join Us, the More Visible We Are, the Stronger We Become festivals returned to the Civic Center, and the attendance grew to an astounding 82,000 in 1975. In 1976, the United for Freedom, Diversity is Our Strength celebration took place on a particularly warm day, with the high temperature being 94 degrees in San Francisco. The festival was again held at Golden Gate Park. A lot of nudity ensued. Not surprising, but the festival was filmed by the agents of ex-Miss America Anita Bryant for her anti-gay campaign. The attendance increased again to upwards of 120,000. The following audio is from Detective John Sorensen during an assembly with young school children during that era.
There may be some in this auditorium. There may be some here today that will be homosexual in the future. There are a lot of kids here. There may be some girls that'll turn lesbian. We don't know. But it's serious. Don't kid yourselves about it. They can be anywhere. They can be judges, lawyers. We ought to know. We've arrested all of them. So if any one of you have let yourself become involved with an adult homosexual or with another boy, and you're doing this on a regular basis, you better stop quick. Because one out of three of you will turn queer. And if we catch you involved with a homosexual, your parents are going to know about it first. And you will be caught. Don't think you won't be caught. Because this is one thing you cannot get away with. This is one thing that if you don't get caught by us, you'll be caught by yourself. And the rest of your life will be a living hell.
In 1977, the parade and celebration themed Gay Frontiers, Past, Present, and Future, changed to today's well-known route from Spear Street, down Market, to City Hall. The attendance more than doubled from the prior year to approximately 250,000. It was in 1977 also that Harvey Milk became the third out American elected to public office. 1978's celebration, called Come Out With Joy, Speak for Justice, saw much more excitement as Milk was growing to power as an inspirational gay icon, only to be assassinated along with San Francisco Mayor George Moscone in City Hall, just under 5 months later.
In the total confusion after the shooting, the president of the Board of Supervisors, Dianne Feinstein, spoke.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation. So come take a look, give me the hook or the ovation. It's my world that I want to have a little pride in. My world, and it's not a place I have to hide in. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am. I am what I am. I don't need praise, I don't need pity. I bang my own drum. Some think it's noise, I think it's pretty.
And so what if I love each feather and each spangle? Why not try to see things from a different angle? Your life is a sham till you can shout out loud, I am what I am. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. I deal my own deck, sometimes the ace, sometimes the deuces. There's one turn and no deposit, one life, so it's time to open up your closet. Life's not worth a damn till you can say, hey world, I am what I am.
Aftermath of Milt's assassination, the 1979 theme was Our Time Has Come. The attendance remained in the 200,000 range. 1979 also marked the 10-year anniversary since the Stonewall Inn riots. Of special significance, the first rainbow flag with 8 colored stripes was raised during the parade in 1978 by Gilbert Baker. This is different from today's commonly known six color version. The original colors and their meanings were as follows: hot pink for sexuality, red for life, orange for healing, yellow for sunlight, green for nature, turquoise for magic and art, blue or indigo for serenity and harmony, and violet for spirit. To make today's six color version, the hot pink and turquoise stripes were removed. This is due to the manufacturing difficulties that hot pink and turquoise pose, as well as the desire to have the flag be easily mass produced. Maybe the production companies need to hire some gays. Baker calls the six color version of the rainbow flag the commercial version. In 1980, the parade was called Liberty and Justice for All. The attendance continued to increase. This was the last year the day was called Gay Freedom Day. 1981 marked a name change for the day, now known as the International Lesbian and Gay Freedom Day Parade. The theme was Frontline of Freedom, and the attendance again reached 250,000, returning to the same attendance as 4 years prior. June 5th, just weeks before the event that year, was the day of the first reported AIDS cases in Los Angeles, then known as the 4-H disease, Haitians, homosexuals, hemophiliacs, and heroin users. It would be more than a year before the Centers for Disease Control would clearly and correctly define the virus and give it the name AIDS. The next 2 years, the attendance fell again to late 1970s numbers of approximately 200,000 until a surge in attendance in 1984. The Unity and More in 84 celebration set a new record, 300,000 attendees. 1985's Honor Our Past, Secure Our Future themed celebration grew again, where attendance was estimated at 350,000. In 1986, the festival was called Forward Together, No Turning Back. In doing research for this segment, I found interesting information regarding 1986. The San Francisco Chronicle's front page story about Pride only said that more than 100,000 people attended. And while that number would indicate a sharp decline in the attendance from the years prior, 400,000 or even more people in attendance still make that a true statement of fact. Also uncovered were controversies around a couple of things in 1986. Autumn Courtney served as the first openly bisexual chairperson of the parade committee, and the two female parade marshals were heterosexual. Although these facts stirred up discussion and debate, there was no reason reported that would lead me to believe that they affected parade attendance at all. In 1988, the theme was rightfully proud, and 1989 marked 20 years since the Stonewall Inn riots. The theme acknowledged the milestone, Stonewall 20, a generation of pride. The next several years were successful events. The future is ours. Hand in hand together. A simple matter of justice. Year of the Queer. And 1994's San Francisco to Stonewall Pride and Protest rounded out the final years of the International Lesbian and Gay Freedom Day Parade. 1994 was also the year that the American Medical Association determined that homosexuality was not an illness. And the same year, Canada granted refugee status to all homosexuals who feared their well-being in their native countries.
You with the sad heart, don't be discouraged, don't realize it's hard to take courage in a world full of people. You can lose sight of it all in the darkness, who inside you make you feel so small. But I see your true color.
It was once again time for a name change in 1995 to the name we still use today, San Francisco Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Pride Celebration. Themes have included A World Without Borders, Equality and Justice for All, One Community, Many Faces, and 1998's Shaking It Up. In 1999, on the verge of a new millennium, the Proud Heritage, Powerful Future celebration acknowledged the proud past of the San Francisco and worldwide LGBT community. This year marked 30 years since it all began at Stonewall Inn. 1999 also saw the celebration of civil unions being legalized in California. In 2000, It's All About Freedom was the theme, and yes, it was. The attendance reached over 750,000 that year. That's the entire population of San Francisco today. The UK ended a ban on gay people serving in their military in 2000, and maybe by the time this segment airs, we will have two, only 11 years later. 2001 was a big year, big in many ways. The theme was simply queerific, too. The attendance was estimated at 1 million people. Wow. Themes since then have been, be yourself, change the world. You've got to give them hope. A clear tribute to Harvey Milk. Out for justice. Stand up, stand out, stand proud. Commemorate, educate, liberate, celebrate. Pride, not prejudice. United by pride, bound for equality. The recorded attendance numbers have been spotty at best, but continued over the 1 million mark, and starting in 2008 have been said to be over the 1.2 million mark. The 40th anniversary of Stonewall was marked in 2009 by the In Order to Form a More Perfect Union parade and celebration. The parade itself turned 40 just last year in 2010, and celebrated with the 40 and Fabulous theme. Today's theme was In Pride, We Trust. Some special thank yous and recognitions are due to the following people and organizations for their help in research for this segment. Joan Ansfire, librarian at the Hormel LGBT Center of the San Francisco Public Library. Brendan Behan, Interim Executive Director of San Francisco Pride. Paul Bonneberg, Executive Director at the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco, and of course, my co-host, Greg Maralia, and the entire Outbeat Radio team. This has been Jeff Basham for Outbeat Radio. Happy Pride.
Do you ever feel like a plastic bag drifting through the wind, wanting to start again? Do you ever feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Do you ever feel already buried deep, 6 feet under screens, but no one seems to hear a thing? Do you know that there's still a chance for you? There's a spark in you, you just gotta ignite the light and let it shine just on the night, like the 4th of July. 'Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show 'em what you work. Make 'em go as you shoot.
You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. Stay with us, the Outbeat Youth segment is next. And welcome to this year's Pride Month edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Maralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond, and we're here every month as part of Outbeat Now. It's Pride Weekend here in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and hopefully no matter where you're listening from, you've found a way to celebrate. We have two amazing guests with us tonight. The first is Jason Galasadas, who just graduated from Aragon High School, where he served as the president of the GSA there. Jason, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And happy Pride to you.
Yeah, happy Pride.
Well, you just graduated from high school this last month, and I hear you're headed off to college.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to college. I'll be heading to Stanford next year.
Good
for
you. So
I'm not going too far.
Well, congratulations on being admitted to Stanford. That's quite an accomplishment. Well, our listeners always love to hear the coming out stories of our guests. So let's start there. Tell us about yours.
Yeah, well, you know, my coming out experience was pretty good, I would say, compared to many people's. In eighth grade, I first came out to a few of my very close friends on a music tour to Europe, and in the mid freshman year, around October, I came out to my parents, and they took it very well. They were very supportive, but primarily they were concerned about my safety. You know, they were worried that I was somehow in danger because I was if I was to be open. And at first they were a little bit reluctant about being super happy about me living openly, but over time, obviously, they've come to accept this and be okay with it, and realize that the danger, while it's there, is not something that's you know, constant. Yeah, and my friends have all been great. The school has been extremely receptive. All my teachers, all my administrators are extremely supportive of LGBT people and me. And so I'm really, really lucky and fortunate to have, you know, lived in the Bay Area where it's more acceptable to be LGBT and, you know, just to have a great family and support system.
Well, that's great to hear you've got so much support at school. Now, were all 4 years like that for you?
Well, I mean, academically, yeah, but, I mean, in terms of bullying, not necessarily. I think my sophomore year, we put on a big, this big rally and protest of Prop 8 after it passed, and it was called Black Friday, and we wore all black to mourn the passing of Prop 8. And I had a PE class at the time, and I think as many LGBT people know, the PE class locker rooms are one of the most volatile for anti-LGBT slurs. So I went to the VE class dressed in my all-black suit because we wanted to, you know, bring as much attention to the issue as possible, and I'd say I definitely got more than I bargained for in terms of attention, and I got harassed by, surrounded by five boys in my PE class, and they called me, you know, faggot and yelled things in my face, and it was just, it was really, really awful at the time, and it was really destructive because it was the first time I had really experienced, you know, the full-fledged homophobia, and it was really difficult. I didn't take it very well, but I recovered. And I think I became stronger because of it, definitely. I was, I actually, towards the end of the year, the boys who had harassed me actually became, not friends, but we were to a point where we could laugh with each other and not have any animosity. So I'd say that, again, I was really blessed to not be in a situation where I was felt like I was in danger while I was at school.
Wow.
So I'm very lucky.
Tell us about how you got involved with your Gay Straight Alliance.
Sure. Well, freshman year, actually, I was really shy. I was, like I said, I'd come out, but I wasn't really out to everybody. So my friends knew I was bi, or bi, quote unquote. I'm actually, you know, I'm gay now. But at the time, I thought I was bi. So they actually forced me to go to a GSA meeting because I was too shy to go because I thought that if people saw me walking into where the meeting was, they would know and, you know, judge me. They finally one day forced me to go, and I saw that it was such a wonderful experience, and it was excellent. And I found really a community where I could, you know, belong in essence. And I got more and more active with it until finally my sophomore year, I ran for president and won. And so I took over GSA second semester of my sophomore year, and I've been president ever since.
Tell me more about your GSA. How big is it?
Yeah, well, the GSA right now has about 35 members on a regular basis, which is pretty big for a GSA. It's definitely among the most popular clubs on campus, if not the most popular. And like I said, I mean, it wasn't always that way. When I went in my freshman year, there were like 11 people in the class, and so it's really mushroomed since. And you know, we actually, whenever we have school-wide rallies and I'm speaking, I always ask, you know, who here has heard of the GSA? And it's so rewarding and so nice to see that everybody raises their hand. So
wow.
It's definitely the most active and public clubs on campus, and it's so wonderful to be a part of it.
Well, one of the major events you did this last spring was the Youth Summit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the Youth Summit is called the Bay Area Youth Summit, and there's a lot more information at www.bayareayouthsummit.org. But essentially what it was a large conference for LGBT and allied youth and adults to come together to learn about how to fight bullying in schools. So we had people from all over the Bay Area and even further come to our school at Aragon High School to talk about, you know, what is bullying and how do we confront it within our schools. We brought in a number of amazing, amazing speakers and had a bunch of great workshops, breakout workshops. So for speakers, we had Cleve Jones, Yeet Pura, who's actually, you know, for Happy Pride, is the celebrity grand marshal.
That's right.
We had Graham Taylor, who went on Ellen for standing up for his teacher at a school board meeting in Michigan. And he's incredibly inspirational. So we had amazing speakers. And for workshops, what they did is we had everybody choose three different workshops to go to, and they rotated. And they go to a classroom and hear a speaker talk on a subject ranging from LGBT people and religion, and then preventing suicide. And we had a number of organizations represented in those workshops.
Sounds incredible. How many people attended?
Throughout the day, we had about 200 to 250. So it was pretty well attended, and we were really happy with the attendance. And I think that it was small enough to where people could get a really intimate experience with the speaker. People were able, I mean, it's not often that you get to have like an intimate, you know, semi conversation with Cleve Jones,
right.
and that was really amazing. That was extremely inspirational to many people, including myself. But it wasn't too small to the point where it was pathetic. So,
right, right.
so I think it was a good balance. We were really happy with the way it turned out in terms of attendance.
So tell us about some of the things you learned personally from participating in the conference.
Yeah. Well, from an organizational point of view, putting it on was probably, so to this point, even more so than college admissions, the most time-consuming process that I've ever gone through. Being in charge of something so magnanimous is extremely difficult. But I learned how to communicate with people effectively, and I learned how to, you know, how to bring people together for a cause that I believe in. I think that's probably the biggest thing I learned from an organizational standpoint. From the point of view of, you know, an attendee, I was also an attendee. You know, I learned a lot about the movement as a whole. Talking to Cleve Jones, you know, we actually went out to dinner with the speakers the evening before, and I got to sit with Cleve Jones and have a conversation with him, and it was just amazing hearing how Harvey was as a person and not just who we see, you know, from Hollywood's point of view, which is great, but it was amazing getting to know how Harvey was, you know, just as a normal human being, and just
right.
And Cleve really represented him as, you know, he's just another guy who did amazing things. And I think it showed me that anybody can really do anything. You know, Harvey was an amazing person, but I think the thing that really differentiated him from other people is that he had a dream. And that's about it. You know, he was a great guy, but it was his vision for the LGBT community that made him who he is
right.
and was. So I think that was really a great thing that I learned from Cleve and from the summit as a whole.
Well, sounds like you really had a great opportunity to sit down with someone who really inspired you. Tell us why these summits are so important for LGBT youth to attend.
Yeah, well, going back to when I was a freshman, you know, I would have loved to have had a place where I could go and just see other people who are like me. You know, I think that we, as LGBT youth in high school, are drowned with a sense of isolation. You know, it's, I mean, even now, like, even as I am extremely involved within the LGBT community, I still feel sometimes like there are not enough of people like me in the world. And I think that's been a problem to the LGBT community. So, you know, I think that aside from the educational part of it, just going to a place where you can see people and see people who are like you, and to go somewhere as a young little gay boy and see a drag queen, you know, be, you know, the epitome of a confident, you know, LGBT symbol, would have been amazing. And I think that that is an incredibly important part of these youth summits. Now, obviously, there's a big educational point of view where you go because you learn a lot about what it is to be bullied and how to deal with bullying. There were wonderful workshops on what to do if you are bullied, what to do if you see bullying, how to prevent bullying, and, you know, just wonderful things like that that can really make a difference in somebody's life. Yeah, so, I mean, it was wonderful. I think you learned a lot, and you got to experience something which is pretty rare for us LGBT youth, which is the sense of community.
Well, for you, next year it's off to Stanford. And after that, you know, what are your goals for the future?
Well, I'm going to major in poli-sci. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do. I probably want to run for District 8 supervisor. That's probably my big goal. Again, that was the same district that Harvey Milk held, and and Harvey Milk is my absolute inspiration, and I'd like to follow in his footsteps as much as possible. But, you know, getting there, you don't just get out of undergrad and go straight into politics. So I probably will get my undergrad in poli sci and then go to law school and maybe practice for a few years in San Francisco.
Well, fantastic. We'll definitely keep our eyes on the ballot for your name.
Well, thank you very much.
We've been talking with Jason Galasadas, who is a recent graduate of Aragon High School and the president of their GSA. Jason, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate all your time. And if people want any more information, they can visit www.bayareayouthsummit.org.
And of course, we'll have that link as well as the link to the GSA network on our own website at outbeatyouth.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Jason. We'll be right back with more Outbeat Youth right after this important message from the Trevor Project.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Well, our next guest is Nathan Mansky, who has started a website called I'm From Driftwood. Nathan, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't you start out by telling us a little about yourself, where you grew up, and where you live now?
Sure. I grew up in a very small town in the middle of Texas called Driftwood, and it's about half an hour southwest of Austin. So it's right there in central Texas. And I ended up going to Austin to go to the University of Texas for college and graduated in 2003. And later that fall, I moved where I live now to Brooklyn, New York. I got an advertising degree, and you know, as most people know, New York is pretty much the place to be if you want to work in advertising. So that's where everything led me, was right here to Brooklyn.
Great. Well, tell us about what I Am From Driftwood is and where the idea came from.
Sure. It's as I just said, I'm from a town called Driftwood. So I wanted to call it I'mFromDriftwood.com because, well, I'll back up a little bit. I'm From Driftwood collects true LGBT stories from all over the world, from small towns and big cities and everything in between. And the idea actually came from the film Milk, which came out in late 2008. And I saw that one evening with some friends and was, you know, inspired like so many people were from the film. And I was thinking about the film the next morning, and I was waking up to go to my advertising job. And I just kept thinking about the film and a popular photograph of Harvey Milk, of him in the San Francisco Pride March. And he was holding a sign that read, I'm from Woodmere, New York. And I just kept thinking about that image over and over again. You know, I was still in bed, snoozing, and I just couldn't get that image out of my head. And then I thought more about it, and I thought, he was holding a sign that said, I'm from Woodmere, New York. And I just kept thinking what that meant. And then it hit me. What it meant to me was that he's not from San Francisco, and he's not from Chelsea, or he's not from all these predominantly more accepting locations. He's from this town on Long Island that, you know, most people have never even heard of. And I was thinking about all this here in New York City, but I'm not from New York City. I'm from Driftwood, Texas. And what that said to me was just that LGBT people are everywhere. They're from everywhere. They have all these different backgrounds and communities and cultures. And I hope that would be a comforting thought to queer youth, particularly in small towns, because being from Driftwood, Texas, I knew what it felt like to feel like the only gay person in the entire state of Texas.
Right.
You know, so that's really where it came from and the inspiration and why it's called I'm From Driftwood. And also, I'm lucky that I'm from a town called Driftwood because it sounds like a small town.
That it does. And I know just that scene you're talking about in Milk, it's perfect. It's really, really a great idea. So how long's the project been going now, and how many stories have you received?
I launched the project in March 2009, so it's been just over 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so we've collected about 700 or 800 stories so far. You know, that's a combination of written stories and video stories. So we have right now about 120 video stories, but we also have about 100 more that we've filmed that we just haven't gotten around to editing yet. But we post about, you know, 2 to 3 video stories a week and 2 to 3 written stories a week. So there's definitely a good chunk of diverse and different stories on there.
So have you had a lot of LGBT youth participate in the project?
I have. We, not so much in the video stories, but we have had some. But for the written stories, yeah, we've had some people write about whether it's, you know, going to the prom, which is great. You know, we have some people going to the prom, some LGBT couples. And, you know, there are some bullying stories, some happy stories, sad stories. It's really all over the place, all over the spectrum in terms of the emotion. But, yeah, there's definitely some stories from teenagers on the site.
So what age group can participate? I guess the better question is, how old do you have to be to submit a story?
Anyone can submit a story, any age. If you are under 18, because I like to use the stories, I give little speeches and presentations sometimes. We also like show video stories. So if I'm going to use it for anything besides the website, then I get permission from whoever submitted the story. But yeah, anyone can submit. You just go copy and paste your story and hit submit on the website. There's a submit your story link. And then it automatically just emails it to me. And then I schedule it to be published and check for spelling and grammar mistakes and just put it up online. So you'll have your own, you know, link to your story that you can pass around and email around and post on Facebook or whatever you want to do with it.
Right. And so you mentioned that you would get a person's permission before you used it off outside of the website. If someone is under 18, do they have to get their parents' permission?
Not to write a story, no.
Okay.
They can just, yeah, copy and paste it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what age group of person would you like to see more stories from?
Really all ages. I mean, but I one group that I've struggled getting stories from is actually the younger people, because it's, for one, they might not be as comfortable as sharing their stories. And also they might not be reading as many blogs because they're not completely out yet, or, you know, there's different reasons, but, ultimately, young LGBT people are my main target, because I want to get these stories in front of them. And on that same regard, I want to get stories from them. I kind of look at I'm From Driftwood as an image or a picture, and every single story that I get fills in one pixel or a dot of paint. You know, so the more stories that I get, a more clear picture of the LGBT community that we can have.
Right.
So, you know, everyone who submits a story is filling in a more genuine picture of what our community is.
Great. So what's your selection criteria for what gets published?
I have a rule that I made with myself that if it's a story from your life, then I'll publish it. And I came up with that rule because early on after launching the site, I got a story and honestly, I just didn't like it. I thought it was a little boring and I was like, this isn't going to make a difference. This isn't, it's just kind of boring. But I told myself, no, it's still a story. They followed all the guidelines, and it's a story, so I'll post it. And within the day of posting it, somebody commented on the story saying, this is the best story on the site yet. And what that told me is that I don't know what story will inspire someone. I don't know what topic or what experience other people need to hear, but that's not my job to filter it. It's my job to get as many different stories out there in front of as many different people as possible. And, you know, it just showed me that I don't know what will inspire people, so I might as well post every single true story that comes my way.
And so tell us where people can go to read the stories and get involved.
Everything is just right there on imfromdriftwood.com. There's a giant pink button on the homepage that says submit your story. That's the way you can you know, send me your story and I'll schedule it and let you know when it'll be posted. And if you want to read the stories, again, go to imfromdriftwood.com. You know, all the stories have tags, so you can, if you read a coming out story, you go to the bottom of the story and you can click on coming out and it'll pull up all the coming out stories. Or if you want a love and relationship story, you can click that. You can search by city or state to look for stories that, you know, where you grew up or where you are now. You know, so it's there's a ton of stories. There's a lot of different ways to search for stories. So, yeah, it's all right there on armsfromdriftwood.com.
Well, what a great way to celebrate Pride Month as well, and Pride Night tonight, you know, to come home and go online and read some of those stories and be inspired. What a great site and a great idea.
Yeah, I hope it affects a lot of people and lets them know that they're not alone. I mean, that's the whole point of creating the site, is letting people know wherever they are, whatever they're going through, or whoever they are, that, you know, you're not alone.
The website, again, is imfromdriftwood.com. And we've been talking with Nathan Mansky, who is the creator of that amazing website. Nathan, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Great. Thanks a lot.
And that wraps up this edition of Outbeat Youth. Be sure to follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Remember, you can always listen and download past shows on our website at outbeatyouth.com and on iTunes. Happy Pride, everyone, and thanks so much for listening. And that also brings us to the end of Outbeat Now. Tune in next Sunday night on Outbeat Radio for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. They'll be celebrating Independence Day with a special Liberty show. Jeff Basham and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday of July with Outbeat Now, where we'll be joined by Senator Mark Leno. And on the Outbeat Youth segment, I'll be talking with Shane Windmeyer, the Executive Director of Campus Pride, all about being an LGBT freshman in college. Until then, happy Pride, everyone, and have a great week. Outbeat Radio.